Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
The Carolina Outdoors is now in session. Come aboard. We're going to be traveling down this information train, and hopefully you will be enticed to take on your adventure and along the way learn a little something about the outdoors and what's going on in our community and in our country. Of course, it's Memorial Day weekend for those that are joining us via the airwaves of WBT Radio as we blast up and down the Eastern Seaboard early on a Saturday morning. Of course, others are joining us via podcast. We welcome everyone aboard, and we're going to talk a little bit later on in the program about Memorial Day and about that weekend and what it is about. But let's recognize what's happening outdoors right now. A lot of people will be hitting our area lakes surrounding the Charlotte area, and we wish them all safety. But the other thing that's going on is we're on a countdown. The countdown for the end of delayed harvest fishing. We talk about it frequently here on the program, and it's really because over at Jesse Brown's, the company that helps power the Carolina Outdoors program, fly fishing is a big deal, and the delayed harvest waters of North Carolina enable the promotion and success for people entering and enjoying the sport of fly fishing. If you're just joining the program, this is your first time hearing about it. North Carolina in the early 1990s brought in the delayed harvest program to help promote people to get out and enjoy trout fishing and recreational fishing. They bring aboard and stock many streams and rivers that would not carry trout throughout the year. Throughout the warmer months, trout require cooler water, colder water to survive. And with the delayed harvest, many of the streams end up being a little bit closer. So why do I say that? And what does delayed harvest mean? It means from October 1st to the first Saturday in June. So we have about 1 week left or so of catch and release fishing. There are some restrictions, artificial lures. You can't keep the fish, obviously. But what happens that first Saturday in June, and why are we tick-tocking until this end date, is because at that time, first Saturday in June, you can keep the fish. You can keep them, and people will be keeping them, and people who are taking home a fresh trout to eat will be enjoying that. Don't worry, the fishing can and will still be good, even though the harvest does begin, and the state still supports the streams. In fact, the designation hatchery supported is what delayed harvest falls under, and many of the trout streams in North Carolina will continue to be stocked, and you can go up and catch, and if you'd like, keep a certain amount of fish. For more information on that, of course, ncwildlife.org, or contact the team over at Jesse Brown's Outdoors, and we'll share the information that we have. You do need a valid North Carolina fishing license, everyone, so before you head out there. Bill Barty is my name. I'm your host here on the Carolina Outdoors. TJ is across the way, saluting with a hearty salute from the other side. We're going to talk about good news. We're going to talk about bad news, just so that you're keeping up. And the bad news, I should make a clarification there. We hear a lot of the bad news, the red meat politics through the week, Monday through Friday, here at least via WBT. But here on the weekend, on a Saturday morning, we like to inform a little bit and talk about what's going on. So here are some predictions. Matthew Cappucci had this in the Washington Post. There are experts predicting the summer weather across the United States. And as I look at TJ over there, TJ, can you imagine what the prediction would be? You don't even have to put up the microphone. You can just guess what summer weather may look like.
I'm going to go with hot and sweaty.
You pretty much got it. I will put this out there. And, of course, a hot, humid summer doesn't exactly require a crystal ball, Capucci writes. But there is a bit of agreement and disagreement about what's going to be coming forward for us this summer. And meteorologists oftentimes look at different forecasts and what's going to be happening. And meteorologists are anticipating above average temperatures and above average rainfall in parts of the eastern and, yes, southern United States. Near normal conditions are going to be in the plains and intermountain west. But, of course, with our eastern and southern focus, we're going to talk about the different weather services that brought this together, what they disagree with, and what they possibly agree with. The National Weather Service, Climate Prediction Center, and AccuWeather, a private forecasting company, are predicting this above-average temperature and rainfall. But weather.com, a competitor, is hewing toward a cooler-than-average start to the summer for the southern U.S., and they've got a more aggressive stance on the role that, here it is, the burgeoning El Niño pattern will play. So, regardless of that disagreement, go ahead and jump in there, TJ.
It's going to be spicy.
It is going to be spicy for sure. Regardless of how the summer shapes up, there are going to be a few staples of summertime that are guaranteed and that is hard to disagree with. Large thunderstorm complexes, of course, as we have here in the South, but if they also have in the plains, Midwest. They're going to increase tropical concerns in vulnerable parts of the Southeast and along the eastern seaboard. So here are the highlights that stood out between the different weather services that are in agreement. Chilly water temperatures off the Pacific coast and soggy soils in California are going to delay the arrival of the brutal heat for the West Coast. The Pacific Northwest is looking hotter and drier than normal. The plains and Midwest will see the eventual emergence of above average temperatures. That means it's going to be hot. Again, in the plains and Midwest, the jury is out for the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic, where the varying forecast enterprises all have different opinions. But here's our part. I saved the best for last. Cooler weather is likely over the southern United States for the month of June.
Okay.
The reason of this is due to the position of key weather systems influenced by the budding El Niño that we mentioned before. While many expect El Niño or La Niña to be a main driver in summer weather over the lower 48, the El Niño Southern Oscillation has its biggest impact in wintertime, not the summer. So we're expecting June to be cooler, but trade-off, July and August, hotter.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
There's a lot of predicting going on for what we know is going to happen.
Hey, we've had a great spring so far. I mean, I feel like we don't normally have a spring that lasts this long.
So that fits. I mean, I know it's not quite June at the taping of the Carolina Outdoors thus far, but what you're talking about does fit this model of the beginnings of a cool June. It's cooler now,
right?
And that will continue for the month of June, but we'll get to pay that piper later, as all of us southern folks already know.
Right. Plan some indoor activities for July and August.
This is the Carolina Outdoors.
The Carolina Indoors. That's a different show.
That is a different show. If you're listening to us via the airwaves of WBT, we hope that you'll tune in Sunday morning, 7 a.m. for Carolina Focus. We have a bit of a segment that's going to pop up on there. It is our talk with the Cradle of Forestry. And if you missed that via the airwaves, you can hear it on the Carolina Focused program, again, Sunday morning at 7 a.m. on WBT and its sister stations, And no fear, you can also pick it up via podcast. Highlights of the Carolina Outdoors, where this segment will reside, that segment will reside, in any segments that you've heard in the past and want to check back out, or maybe you just missed them. We're going to take a quick break and come back. We're going to talk about wildlife. Believe it or not, in the springtime, wildlife in the outdoors is something that's happening. We're going to find out about people meeting this wildlife and what we can do about it. He's TJ. I'm Bill Barchi. You're listening to the Carolina Outdoors. Graduation is in the air. Remember those outdoor gifts for those graduates? Of course, Father's Day is going to follow soon thereafter. Welcome, everyone, to the Carolina Outdoors. Each week, we come in to break down four different segments for your listening pleasure. Hopefully, along the way, you'll learn something, and hopefully, along the way, you will be able to get outside and enjoy what we have going on in the Carolina outdoors. I mentioned delayed harvest. The delay is about to end in the last segment, so please note that. That means for all you trout fishermen, you'll be able to quit releasing the fish if you choose, and you'll be able to keep some as well. On those delayed harvests, those are the black and white placards. You'll see them on the trees. If you have any doubts, just check out ncwildlife.org. Another thing going on, please note, because it's just 1 hour south of Charlotte, and we spoke to them last week here on the program, Lansford Canal State Park, Chester County, South Carolina, is the home to the spider lily bloom that's going on. It'll be going on now into June, well into June, but please check it out. If you have any questions about it, of course, highlights of the Carolina Outdoors, just type in spider lily or Lansford Canal. All the information will be there. You can have a nice, easy stroll in the South Carolina State Park alongside the Catawba River and be able to check out the beautiful bloom and the wildlife that they have in the park as well. Wildlife is something that has been in the news. We're going to talk a little bit later on in the program to a specialist. A wildlife specialist is going to come on the program from Song Dog Wildlife, and we're going to learn a little bit about that. Why are we talking about that? Because it's coyote season in North Carolina, and there's an increased risk of them showing up in your neighborhood. This is according to the NC Wildlife Resource Commission. They put out a statement because these normally reclusive animals are spending more and more time scouting for food, feeding their newborn pups. And we're going to find out, of course, Song Dog is in reference to coyotes. But are they dangerous to humans? Our guest is going to share this. There are rare instances. They are rare, but they can happen. So that is something to pay attention to. Pup season here in the spring brings added factors to interacting with coyotes. And that's mainly because coyotes, where they normally would shoo off if you saw them, they're more likely to stand their ground with pups going on. So how to protect pets from coyotes? They naturally prey on rodents and sometimes can mistaken small pets, including cats and small dogs, as food. So keep a close eye on your pets. Bring them in at night. Keep them behind a dog-proof fence at least 6 feet tall, and prevent digging underneath will help keep your pets safe. The Wildlife Resource Commission also talks about how to haze a coyote. When coyotes have, quote, unquote, adapted to urban and suburban environments, the Humane Society of the U.S. explains, they are more likely to hang out around populated areas, posing risk to them and people and pets. So hazing is a deterrent to move an animal out of an area or discourage any undesired behavior or activity. What is hazing? Yelling and waving your arms while approaching the coyote. Noisemakers, whistles, air horns, bells, shaker cans with pennies or marbles inside of it all will help scare off this animal. Last but not least, you can spray the coyote with water from a garden hose or something like that, and we'll talk Again, later on in the program, more about that. We do have pepper spray at Jesse Brown's that has been ever popular with people coming in just as a deterrent. I mentioned in the open here on the Carolina Outdoors that there's some things going on outdoors that are unpleasant to talk about, but for education purposes, maybe we feel that we should talk about it. And just this week, there was a 36-year-old hiker, an Indiana hiker, who died on the very popular Grand Canyon National Park Trail called the Bright Angel Trail. The hiker, again, from Indiana, wanted to reach the Colorado River from the rim of the canyon and back in one day. So it's about 8 miles down into the canyon to the Colorado and a steep 8 mile climb back out. The hiker was found unresponsive on the trail above the 3 mile rest house. Rescuers attempted resuscitation. But she passed away. So it brings about, as we get into the warmer weather months, and of course in the Grand Canyon, it can be severely hot. In fact, they don't recommend summertime hiking there between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. because that's when hikers report the most heat-related illnesses. So what are some of the preventions besides picking carefully and choosing carefully the times of day that we're going to hike, how to beat the heat and treat ourselves so that we can have a good hike. When temperatures are extremely high, some people's bodies can have trouble regulating temperature. And in those cases, people can experience heat exhaustion and have muscle cramps, nausea, weakness, or cold, clammy skin. All of this according to the CDC. If heat exhaustion continues for too long, it can lead to heat stroke, and that is the most serious form of heat injury. So, what to do if people choose to be outdoors, if they're working outdoors, dangerously hot temperatures? Here's what to do. Carry and drink plenty of water. Plan to replenish those electrolytes. Eat more food than normal and keep salty foods on hand. That helps keep the moisture inside you. Always have a first aid kit on hand and only pack essentials if necessary. Bring a flashlight with spare batteries to hike during a time when the daytime is so hot and then it cools in the evening, just in case. Spray yourself down with water to cool on. Have a hat and sunscreen as protection from the sun, and have a whistle or signal for emergency use. Of course, we have those items at Jesse Brown's. Another item we'll be talking about more of as we get into the warmer weather months is sun protection clothing, so that you'll be protected from the sun, the UVA, the UVB rays, but also so that you will be cooler. That's right. Sun protective clothing, the long sleeve even, helps keep your temperature regulated and lower to help prevent heat exhaustion and heat stroke. Hey, every Memorial Day weekend, I like to remind myself what Memorial Day is all about. Of course, it's nice to recognize veterans, first responders, police, when you see them out at a ball game, at a concert. But Memorial Day isn't Veterans Day. Memorial Day asks us to do something that we seemingly aren't as good at these days. It asks us to be reverent, solemn, and yes, even prayerful. It's a mixed bag of sympathy, introspection, thankfulness for those who died while serving in the military for our country. For many of us, death in service is removed. We are aware of damage that military service can inflict in battle on those that survive. Lost legs, arms, eyes, head trauma, PTSD. But Memorial Day is a day that we remember and recognize those that we can't see at all in person. We see them in photographs, headstones, names on walls, and statues. This is a day for us to remember them. One other way that I left out is, oh yes, through song. In fact, one of our most famous songs to memorialize came during the Civil War. The song was initially called Butterfield's Lullaby, and it came about July 2nd, 1862, just after the Battle of Richmond. Union Brigadier General Daniel Adams Butterfield and his brigade bugler Oliver Norton went to work because Butterfield wanted a call for lights out that was not as formal as the Army's then current regulation call. They penned a revision of a French bugle signal, 24 melancholy notes, that actually ended up becoming the regulated tune. After they adopted the new tune and played it at the end of each day, the men loved it. Other brigades began to adopt it. It was used, written by a Union soldier, at the funeral of a Confederate general, Stonewall Jackson. Now it is used in accompaniment with the lowering of the flag and the signal lights out by scouts, military, and others. Again, it is the regulation played at all U.S. military funeral ceremonies. That song is called Taps. Stay tuned for more, because we're going to continue this conversation and bring on our guest here on the Carolina Outdoors. Hey, Mary Ramsey had an article in the Charlotte Observer. Coyote sightings are up in North Carolina. How to protect yourself and your pets. We talked a little bit about that in the previous segment. So it's been in the news lately. Bats in high schools, alligator attacks in Florida, bears in the Asheville area, and coyotes and snake sightings occurring more and more frequently here in the Carolinas. The list goes forever when wildlife interacts with us, but it's warmer. And we're out there more, and they are moving around out there more. But when we talk about wildlife activity, we're going to jump over to Song Dog Wildlife Management. We're going to bring the main man from over there, Andrew Cole, on the program to talk to us a little bit about this wildlife, mixing it up with people to a degree. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Well, Andrew, let's keep it easy to start with. Of course, warm weather's moving us around, including us people. Snakes are out there seeking warmth, you know, looking for that sunlight, and people are out there hiking, fishing, working in their yards this time of year. That's bringing these species together. How should we outdoor folk handle the interaction with something like snakes that we see out there?
Well, in the Charlotte area, I guess we're talking Carolinas in general, but in the Charlotte area where I service, you know, the only snake that's of concern is the copperhead. Copperheads are a pit viper, so they're an ambush type snake. So if you're working in and around or outdoors doing something, hiking, hunting, fishing, whatever, you just need to be aware of copperheads in brushy areas, areas with thick understory, thick ground cover. And also, there at dark, I get a lot of phone calls right at dark where copperheads will come out of their hiding spots, their haunts, and they'll go out on the paved areas, especially driveways, roads, pavers, patios. They'll come out of their hiding spots and charge up on the pavement. So when you get home from work, you go out to your mailbox or you go out to the vehicle to get something out, or you let go for a walk or a jog at dark, you need to be aware that that's one of the primary times that copperheads are on the move. Like a dripping spigot on the side of your house is attractive to copperheads. Pine needles, periwinkle, any type of thick ground cover is attractive to the different trophic levels of critters that copperheads are interested in as prey. So there are some things you can do to try to avoid attracting them to your property, but mostly you just need to be aware that they're there and be careful when working in and around or hiking or whatever you're doing in and around thick ground story.
And Andrew, let me ask you this too. Of course, you know, we're the outdoor show, so we like to talk about hiking, biking, hunting, fishing, all that sort of stuff. Sure. That's going on. We're not the home improvement guys, and we're not the yard or landscape show. Sure. But with that being said, a lot of people are doing those things in the springtime. And, of course, with what you do at Songdog, as far as nuisance, capturing wildlife, all that sort of stuff, I know, Andrew, that your phone rings off the hook in the springtime with people who are doing this stuff in their yard, because they're doing their pine straw. They're doing their fence fixing up in and all that sort of stuff. How can you tell between a copperhead and just a good old friendly black snake?
Sure. You know, black rat snakes as an adult, you know, they're going to be black or like a faded pattern on top. They'll have a lot of times a white chin and underbelly. You know, they're going to be a longer, you know, 4 or 5 foot, you know, 6 foot snake as an adult. As a juvenile, when they're born out of an egg, you know, they have a cryptic pattern which throws people off. You know, I mean, most people aren't well, you know, schooled in snake identification, so they keep their distance. But copperheads, they have that hourglass pattern on their skin, whether they're, you know, they're live birth. So they'll have that pattern from the time they're born to the time they're an adult. You know, juvenile copperheads will have a yellow-tipped or a neon-green-tipped tail. The pupil of the copperhead is elliptical shaped, whereas a lot of your non-venomous species have a round-shaped pupil. Most people will joke that they'd never get that close to look at the eye, but
I would be one of those people.
Yeah, so, I mean, copperheads, if you get to know them and study them real well, you know, they don't much change in their color and the pattern from the time they're a juvenile to an adult snake. Rat snakes, again, kind of like a deer fawn. You know, when the young are born, they'll have a cryptic pattern to hide them from predators until they reach adulthood. Sometimes they'll retain that pattern, and depending on what part of North Carolina you're in, you know, rat snakes in different parts, like on the coast where I used to work, you know, they have yellow rat snakes and gray rat snakes. Some people call them a chicken snake. There's lots of different species of snakes, but, you know, one of the signs, of course, is looking at the eye. The, you know, water snakes all the time are misidentified, that people think that they're water moccasins, you know, cotton mouth. But you want to look at the eye, and a lot of times too, the, you know, cotton mouth copperheads will have kind of they have that arrow shaped head, but they'll have a sharp ridge or a sharp line above their eye where their head kind of has this blocky square edged look to the head. Again, you know, not people say, oh, I'm not going to get that close, but you just want to study those snake species really well, because there's a wide array of different non-venomous that could be misidentified, from hognose snakes to water snakes, corn snakes. There's a lot of different species out there. Just, you want to keep your distance and know your snakes as best as you possibly can, especially if you're out, most outdoorsmen and people that go out and spend any time in the woods or in the field, you have a pretty good idea of what they're looking at.
You would fit that bill too. I mean, with what you do for a living, and you are a trained wildlife biologist with over a decade of experience in working with wildlife, Andrew, over at Songdog, when essentially we should leave these snakes alone unless we have to do something. Even the copperheads, if they're not in a place that's really encumbering to us in the yard or on a hike or whatever, we should just let it be. When does Songdog come into play? When do we need to call you? And I'm going to hint, because I know you have some household extractions that you've played a part in.
Sure. Most of the, you know, like snake removals will fall, you know, especially with black rat snakes. They actively explore and look for prey, especially during the day. They'll even, just out of curiosity, explore places. They're very well adept at climbing. They're almost semi-arboreal in a way, like a tree boa. They'll scale brick straight up. So a lot of my snake calls would be like, hey, come get this snake out of my kitchen or out of my house.
Right.
Copperheads, it's, you know, it's on my patio, it's, I've had them where they were in crawl spaces or in sheds, hanging around a pool area. It's mostly on the outside perimeter of the house. You know, I you know, encourage people to not kill snakes because they do serve a purpose, but
right,
that's hard to tell somebody who's terrified of them or if it really is presenting an issue. But I field a lot of different calls. I do a lot more education and technical guidance with snakes than actual services. I think as people become more aware and educated with snakes, you know, a lot of the snake calls where they think it's a copperhead turn out to be a juvenile species of a different, you know, a different kind of snake, or you know, a totally harmless snake that they stumble across in their garden or something. But yeah, most of the like inside of a house structural snake stuff that I've done is rat snakes. But I did get a call one time from a guy that says that, you know, he went to go start up an old truck. It had been sitting for a while, and he got in it, and it's an old Nissan, so a little clutch truck, and he went to go put it in gear, turned it on, and when he mashed the clutch, it was like something was like pulling on it, like something was tied to the brake.
Ooh.
He was like, "What is going on down there?" And he looked down in his floorboard, and there's a copperhead like draped across the clutch, the brake, and the accelerator. So he jumped out of the truck. He calls me, tells me about it. So I go there, check it out. He'd had, you know, mice were getting in the truck over time. The truck had been just sitting for a while.
Right.
And sure enough, a copperhead had made it up inside the interior of the truck. That was a pretty wild one there. I got there. The snake's gone. I pulled up the where the little plastic covering is down by the stick shift. And sure enough, I see the copperhead laying up under there. So I pried him out of there. Field a lot of calls from snakes.
Bill Barty here on the Carolina Outdoors. Our guest, Andrew Cole, owner of Songdog Wildlife. And, Andrew, it's easy for us in the outdoors to, as the weather warms, to talk about snakes. And I'm going to ask you about coyotes at the golf course in just a moment. But what's another animal that plays a part in the springtime, summertime, as the weather warms, that interacts with us humans more, that you have to deal with?
Oh, you know, the public enemy number one is gray squirrels and attics, which starts in late winter and goes clear into June. And then there will be a second litter of squirrels that comes off in the end of summer into fall. But it's spring going into the summer, you know, bats will start showing up. They'll either come out of hibernation here locally, or they migrate to our state and set up shop and form roosts. They, you know, our colonial bats, you have two different groups of bats, solitary bats and colonial bats. Colonial bats are the structural bats, ones you find that can end up in houses or churches, schools, commercial buildings. They'll form a roost. Normally they like to be up inside like a tucked away in a covered, you know, secluded spot. So soffit boxing or construction gaps along the roof lines, anywhere above 8 feet, they like to hang out. So they'll get inside structures and form a roost in there and hang. They'll leave at night and go do their foraging on insects and then come back at twilight. Lot of bat work.
And we just had that, of course, that made the news because in South Charlotte, down, I guess it was Audrey Kell High School, that they had 2 to 3 dozen bats by count, I think, that were took up residence in the school. So I don't know if they're changing their mascot down there yet or not, but that is one thing to consider.
Sure.
Andrew, go ahead.
I was going to just say, I've done a lot of work with bats in schools and churches, especially when I first started in wildlife control up in the Triad area. But yeah, it's pretty common. Any type of structure that they can get in, you know, get inside of, get into a wall void or boxing, you know, bats will find a home there. It can present an issue with guano and urine accumulations. Even though it's less than 2%, they are carriers of rabies. So that's why there's, not unwarranted hysteria about it, but it should be concerns when there are bats in structures.
Right, and I guess once you do a removal or doing a consultation, one of the things over at Songdog is reentry prevention that you work on. So once those things are gone, to prevent them from coming back?
Sure, it goes hand in hand. You know, I always describe bat exclusion work as a three-step process. First, you go there, inspect the structure, and quote, and then if upon approval, you go there and you start sealing, screening, shielding, vent guarding, bat-proofing the structure, and along the way, anywhere there's active entry points or where the bats are going in and out, you install cones or valves, like a basically one-way door for those bats to exit but not regain entry. And then the third step would be to come back, pull all the cones, all the bat release devices, and then finish your seal-up work. And then sometimes, you know, if accessible or doable, you know, there can be guano cleanups where you know, go in and remove physically or with a HEPA filter vacuum, you remove the guano accumulations that may be inside structures. But it's a process that you know, you have to have a detailed eye for.
What an exciting job. If you're just joining us here on the Carolina Outdoors, the voice over there, Andrew Cole, he is the main man at Songdog Wildlife Management, specializing in nuisance wildlife capture, removal, reentry prevention, and more. Probably as much education and consultation, which is what he's doing with us here on the Carolina Outdoors to let us know what's happening out there as the weather's warmer and us humans are out there more and more, and we get to interact with more and more wildlife, how we should handle ourselves and what we should expect. And Andrew, of course, I mentioned I'm sure you get calls for identifying snakes that some of your clients are calling for, needing help with and consultation. We do the same at Jesse Brown's. And one of the phone calls that we had recently, we've had several, because one of the items that we have on sale there at Jesse Brown's is pepper spray, bear spray. And so we take phone calls of, you know, my wife saw a coyote here, or we were at the driving range and a coyote came out of the woods. And so we have people coming in to get this pepper spray, this bear spray, just for their own protection and their pet's protection. Tell us, do you have any interactions with coyotes out there and how we should handle ourselves with coyotes in the Charlotte area?
Oh, yeah, the coyote, another name for the coyote is the song dog. So that's where I came up with the name for my company.
Oh, yes.
Branding around it. I do quite a bit of coyote work in and around Charlotte. As a matter of fact, I just finished working on a job over in the Foxcroft area.
Oh, South Charlotte, yes.
There's been a male coyote over there I've been trying to catch for a while now. I've already caught two females back, a ways back. But, yeah, I mean, coyotes, and I tell everybody this, is that they're an opportunistic predator. So nobody can speak with absolution about what they can and can't do. They're an opportunistic predator that may gauge or size up any situation that they see fit. And, you know, so you can take a lot of cultural methods and precautions to prevent issues with coyotes, and most of your situations, you know, there's not going to be an issue, but you know, they are opportunistic predators. So small dogs, small cats outdoors, unattended small children. You know, we've been seeing more and more attacks on kids and people as there's more animals moving into urban and suburban environments. And they prefer to be there. A lot of people say we moved them out of their habitat. Sure, that may be the truth, but they also like to be in places like Uptown Charlotte and these boroughs that, like Myers Park and Foxcroft and Noda, where I've done work, because those animals are not pressured, they're not hunted, they're not trapped, they're not shot at by farmers. They have a plethora of different food sources and availability to them, and they live like kings. They're the apex predators in those environments. And so when you have animals that are born and raised in those environments, animals that adapt to them, they become brazen. And so there's there's always the potential for a coyote to bite risk and attack risk, but especially with coyotes hanging around, you know, trying to nab a pet. If you leave a small dog or a cat outside unattended, there's always a chance there could be an attack. I see missing cat posters all over Charlotte, and I know what that is.
Right. Yep. I went ahead and took those down, by the way. Mine, anyway. I lost two cats that way, but we know what happened.
Yeah, unfortunately, you see, it's going on. And they're everywhere. Coyotes are all across the southeast and mid-Atlantic. Every one of the 100 counties in North Carolina has coyotes. They got here through range expansion, artificial range expansion. You know, I'm sure there's been some importations because of the live market trade that where they escaped or it kind of inflated the situation. They're here to stay. And so you can take measures and things to protect yourself and your pets. I mean, carrying around a can of mace, you'd probably, or bear spray, you'd probably never use it on a coyote, but you never know. I mean, when they had all those brush fires out in California and all the coyotes were pushed out of the hills down into these urban and suburban environments and the coyotes were all pushed in there and they were hungry, they were ripping dogs out of leashes out of people's hands. So,
well, so that's a fair thing. That is a worry, and that's where the pepper spray came in from Jesse Brown.
Sure.
Andrew Cole, thank you so much from Song Dog Wildlife. Let me get the website. Check my work here, Andrew. SongDogWildlife.com. If you have any pest wildlife needs, Andrew's the man to call over at Song Dog. Named after the howling, bone-chilling sounds of the coyote. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us here on the Carolina Outdoors.
Thank you for having me on, Bill. It was my pleasure.
We love it. We're going to take a quick break, come back on the other side, and wrap this thing up called the Carolina Outdoors. We're going to talk about what we talked about on the Carolina Outdoors. If you're waking up early on a Saturday and missed the whole show, don't worry. It's available via podcast. Highlights of the Carolina Outdoors, wherever you listen to your podcast. If you don't want to go there, head over to jessebrowns.com, hit podcast. You can hear this segment, that segment, and all the other segments. Special thanks to Andrew Cole for joining us from Song Dog Wildlife, coming on to tell us about how to handle ourselves while we're outdoors with wildlife or if they come home with us. Also thanks to my friend across the way, TJ the DJ Boggs, pushing buttons and playing the music. Get out there and make the Carolina Outdoors a little bit better than you found it, and pick up your trash.